cliffcentral.com. Future CEOs on cliffcentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs here on Cliff Central. It's so good to be with you today. My name is Gareth Armstrong, and if you can answer yes to the question, are you a future CEO? Well, then this is the show for you. What do we do here? We bring in those who are on the journey. We bring in those who have often hit the pinnacle of their journey, and we talk to them about their experiences, what they have been able to do, what they have struggled with, what their lessons are from some of the things that they have maybe failed in, and we allow them to share this openly with all of us, with all of you. Why? So that we can expedite this process of getting either into the corner office or growing our businesses. Today will be no less of a difference. Samir, are you comfortable with the introduction that I've just given to the show? You're happy to still be a part of this conversation?
I am. Still happy.
Okay, I'm very, very pleased to hear that. Yeah. Samir, would you just introduce yourself to our Future CEOs audience, and then let's start talking a little bit. You've got a very interesting history. I'm not going to steal your thunder.
Yeah.
And make sure you brag a little, please.
Okay. So, 10 years ago, I finished matric, and I think the core mission was, how can we build an education platform that can help more students get into university?
Okay.
So I went to a private school. I know what the luxuries are of having people around to give you those materials, and the majority of the country doesn't have that.
Mm.
So I got together with some friends, spent the first 3 years trying to understand what a business is.
Okay.
And it just took forever to launch something that ended up being amazing.
Mm.
And that was a good learning for me at first. That's when I knew I loved education.
But by the way, the average time to get some kind of success in a business is about 3 years anyway. And,
okay.
And I appreciate the fact that you would mention or say that it took you 3 years to learn how business actually works or what goes into a really good business model, because often people go into business thinking that they're going to sell or do one thing and then do something totally different. I hope that wasn't the case with you. I hope you didn't have to reiterate too many times.
Well, you have to iterate a lot of times, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like Mark Zuckerberg just gave this commencement speech at Harvard, right?
Mm.
And if you watch that movie, The Social Network, you'd think a business is built as fast as a 120-minute film.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So now that you're saying, yeah, it takes this long to build a business, I mean, back then we thought we were like wasting time.
Mm.
But yeah, it takes some time to learn. And I think the best thing is about learning or building a business without knowing anything is that you start to figure out all the things that you don't know.
Yep.
You start to know what you don't know. And
you find
the gaps. You find out that's what's really exciting. And for me, finding the gaps, it helped me to understand how to contextualize my education.
Mm.
So going into a class and sitting in something like social studies, which might feel like it has no meaning, it's like, okay, I understand. I'm understanding a little bit about how people work, how societies work.
Exactly.
And that determines how my product works.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that was the beginning of that journey. I realized that I wanted to continue in this space, but while I was very good at what we call product development, designing products that people want, how do you get people to pay for things, right? Because everything needs to work in some sort of sustainable system. And then I realized I knew nothing about how to run and manage a business.
What's so interesting about what you're saying is the CEO of a now 3 billion, probably more now, we interviewed him a couple of years ago, probably now 4 or 5 billion rand business, at the time 3 billion, said, if you think you've got a really good product, if you think you've got a really good business, go out and try and sell that product for 5,000 rand and then tell me whether you've got a product or a business.
Absolutely.
It's all about that sale.
Mm.
And so you experienced that firsthand. Just talk us through maybe one or two experiences around that. What was your first sales experience like?
I mean, you know what? There's like this. There's this culture in South Africa where people are just so focused on age, right?
Okay.
When you walk into a boardroom and if you look like you're like 17 and you just, you know, your mother just gave birth to you, people don't really respect you in the boardroom. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas if I compare that to like my experience living in Canada and North America, it's like the younger you are, the more people are actually trying to listen to what you're saying.
Yeah, they're trying to glean information.
They really are, because they respect the fact that you see the world in a completely different way from them. That might be valuable for them.
Just drop the name. I mean, you got a big brand.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah, look, so I think this is what Gareth wants me to get into. And in my pursuit to learn about business, I could have gone and joined an MBA program at a great school.
Yeah.
But I chose to join the business department at Google, and that was in Google Ireland, the headquarters for Europe and Africa, and that's where I've spent my last 3 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
And as you say, you could have gone into an academic environment, but instead you went into the real world. Mm-hmm. There was a real taste of it all there. But as you say, in that kind of environment, they are continuously looking for new thinking, new ways of going about things, which is, as again you've said, not really a culture that exists in South Africa. Talk us through then the experience, the Google experience, just in a nutshell.
Yeah, I mean, just to maybe extend on your point, I mean, you know, you've just graduated out of school, okay, you're 21, and you're invited to a revenue meeting, and you're sitting at the table with very seasoned veterans in the game. Mm. These are like ex-directors of like an Oracle or a Microsoft, and they're discussing the objectives for the year. And then you'll have this 21-year-old girl who puts up a hand and says, I don't actually agree with that. Mm. Do you think that our strategy could actually be different or perhaps change the objectives altogether? And it's the merit of ideas at the table that's respected, not who is delivering those ideas. Mm. And when you see those kinds of transformations, you understand why a great company functions the way that it does. Because things are done differently. We understand that great innovation ideas could come from anybody, any culture, any background, any direction, any way of delivering. And that kind of openness, that diversity, we call it pluralism as well. Mm. I think that's the beginning of any great company, any great organization.
I think the way that I'm translating it is, in this particular conversation, is the person that asks the best questions is the person that I want around the table. Would you say that that's accurate?
Absolutely, right? And I mean, and ask questions, right? But then also offer solutions. We need to be in that culture all the time. We tend to enjoy disagreeing for disagreeing's sake, right? I just want to let somebody know that I don't think the same. But then how about following that up with a solution? And so the language we use in such a company is really important, right? For example, if you say I have this idea and I say, no, Gareth, but this, this, and this, you know, we actually do some conscious training around how we speak about things. So I'll say, yes, Gareth, and. Mm. So we say we go from no, but to yes, and. Yeah. And these things become a part of what we call culture, right? And that's, again, cornerstones of innovation.
So this was then your experience in an environment where it was practically implemented. You were there for a number of years in the Google environment. Just talk us through a little bit of that. You walk into the doors and your biggest surprise was?
Right. So the question I get at every talk that I do, where no matter where I am, is it like the movie The Internship?
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Right. Now, Hollywood is a bit exaggerated, right? Mm. But a lot of it is true, right? As far as like being in a really cool environment, being in a place where you don't have to think about food, being in a place where, you know, you've just come out of a meeting, but you can access a swimming pool within 10 meters.
Sure.
Right? Those are the things that make up, I guess, what would be the Western world's basic needs. And that's really cool as well. But then on the other hand is all these different people that you're around. And these really cool people from very many different countries and many different backgrounds.
Define cool. So
what is cool?
We're not talking about someone that looks great necessarily. I mean, and they may do that, but cool is what? Cool, translate that for us.
Cool is you're sitting in a revenue meeting, you're discussing a finance strategy with somebody who has got the most incredible knowledge of statistics and data capturing, but their previous career was in a circus as a clown.
That is cool.
Do you know what I'm saying?
And imagine what can come out of that conversation.
I mean, it's like crazy. I mean, it's this is what we talk about, like diversity in real life. And so there's people that are sitting around you that have come together from, you know, very unconventional backgrounds. Their stories are all unique and they all want to express their curiosities and their passions in different ways, right? And so that makes you think different about how we educate and how we function.
Are you familiar with swarm? I forget what it's actually called now, but some kind of swarm learning. Are you familiar with the term?
No, never heard of it actually.
It's where they pull a very diverse group of individuals into a room, make them look at a box, and then get the perspective on that box or that product. When I say box, of course, I'm meaning different things. But they want different people's perspectives on that. And I think that's what I'm hearing you say. What do you think are the challenges of, beyond this idea of age or a lack of whatever it is, self-awareness maybe from older generations who are threatened by younger people in a room? What do you think the problems are to getting that kind of thing going in every organization, because that's really the future of organizations, isn't it? This idea or the ability to be creative, to innovate, and to use multiple perspectives to do that.
I mean, I think this is like the golden currency of organizations of the future. It's not like diversity for diversity's sake, right? South Africa's got this whole BE system.
Yeah.
And that's more like about check boxes rather than like appreciating and loving the fact that everybody here is not only different, but it is their differences that will drive and build a business. And this is what is golden. And so when we talk about diversity, especially now in the world, this idea of diversity, it's like, let's put more women at the board, right? Let's make sure that there's more, let's say, Mexican or Black Americans. This is, for example, an American story right now. How can we have more of these people in the company? And it's not really so much about what people look like or what their gender is, but as a result of them coming from these different backgrounds, when we really talk about diversity or deep dive it, it's about diversity of thought.
Exactly.
Right? It's about diversity of ideas. Mm-hmm. And that stems from different cultures, because ultimately, if you're trying to build a global company, you now need to build products for people that come from different cultures, that come from different ideas.
It's so fascinating. There was a study that I read the other day which said if you learn just one other language from an entirely different culture, just one other language, you will look at the world differently, because that language makes you process information differently. And just that small thing, just a language, can change the way that you look at that box, at that product, at the service that you're offering in your business. I mean, you must have this diversity of thought as you're talking.
And I love that you use the word language, because I was reflecting on this yesterday. Language, I think about how I do my work, okay? And I think if we just talk about the foundation, the underlying foundation of this conversation we're having, it's called empathy, right? Empathy means, really, do I understand everybody around me?
Yep.
Language might be understood in the conventional sense of, okay, so you're German and I'm South African, right? Let's say that. And then we speak the same language. But languages happen also in different forms. Like, there's languages in culture and in behavior.
Absolutely.
There's also language in discipline. For example, if the two of us are going to work together and build a startup, and you're an engineer, right? But I'm going to be the salesperson. We understand each other and we can collaborate. If I, as the salesperson, even though my everyday is just about revenue, you feel like I understand something about how the product is built.
Yep, absolutely.
And the other way around.
Yep.
Again, that's also language. And we start to empathize for each other and how we can build things together. And this is what we call diversity.
It's remarkable. I don't actually know how businesses existed in the past working in silos the way that so many large organizations do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to then the Google experience, because it's an easy reference.
Right.
Talk about cross portfolio collaboration.
Mm.
Does it happen? It must happen. I'm going to assume that it does. What is your experience of it?
Yeah. So I mean, you know, textbooks are like very heavy, right? There's all these ideas of like how structure works.
Mm.
But then you know, collaboration or cross portfolio collaboration also happens in these, you know, very unconventional areas. Of course, a company like Google would intend this. Like, for example, the swimming pool.
Mm.
You know, after I've swum a few laps, I see a guy standing next to me, and he works in HR.
Mm.
Or maybe he works in artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
And then we have a conversation. That social environment, or that common area to have lunch together, or these activities that bring people together from different departments, they're there so that people can collaborate, so that people can talk and people can share ideas.
You know what I love about it is that so often organizations run collaboration workshops.
Yeah.
When actually, just put me in a room with you.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you, hey, what project are you working on? And I say, oh, well, what have you thought about this angle?
Right.
And we're doing it over a meal. And then that's collaboration, right?
It is collaboration.
That's innovation happening right there in the moment without you having to try and force it on your employees.
Yeah. So the free food is not just about like free food, right?
Yeah.
It's like, we're not going to go to like a spa. Someone goes to the shop, right, in the Woolworths and get lunch. Mm. We're all going to have lunch at the same place.
Mm.
We're going to sit at the table like a family, and we're going to learn about each other. And that's how we're going to share ideas across the department.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's a fascinating thing. Okay, let's move the conversation then.
Yeah.
So you've gone through that experience.
Right.
You're now back in South Africa.
Yeah,
I'm back in South Africa. You moved here just recently.
Yeah.
In fact, I think you landed at the beginning of the week.
Yeah, I did.
So welcome back.
Thank you.
You're here doing what?
Right.
So something happened at Google. You started something. Let's just tell everyone about that, because I know a little bit about
it. Right.
But but go for it. Share it, please.
Okay, and maybe I'll just take it a step back further. Maybe it'll be interesting for the listeners.
Sure.
And so, you know, I talked about starting my first education venture, right? And it was acquired by this Mark Zuckerberg-backed fund, university. And then the next question was, you know, Samir, are you going to get involved in the next step? And I needed to be honest with myself and say, I don't actually understand this. And so I joined Google in the revenue and growth department, which is all about understanding digital advertising. Not an area that I'm particularly excited about. It's a very exciting area, but not for me. However, there were skills therein that were extremely important for me.
Yeah, there's some serious learning.
Right.
Languages, again.
Right. And so my job was to be an entrepreneur and to grow a portfolio of clients within a certain part of South Africa. And so this taught me and helped me understand the rigor of what it means to run an organization and what it means to work with people. And so having learned that, I needed to now transfer back into what I really loved. And that was now getting back to education again. I kind of used Google as an environment to prototype my ideas, right? So I talk about prototyping and a lot of the stuff that I do. And that's just about quickly testing out things.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's where then iteration comes in.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Constant thing.
Right. So in the first venture, I make these pitch decks, right? Which is basically slides on PowerPoint. And you go and you pitch and you pitch and pitch and you never truly know that everything you're talking about is actually not relevant when you get to the field. So then I tried it the other way around. Let's start in the field and we'll build the business later. And we started this class called Life Design. And the course was described as how to bring together your passions, your talents, your values, and the impact you want to make in the world to do the work that you're made for. Because I think this idea of human purpose is it's the underlying idea of like us understanding why we are here.
Let's just clear the air for a moment at this point. This is not a millennial thing.
No,
it's there's energy being given by millennials on to this idea of meaning, this constant why am I doing it, but generations past have asked that question over and over and over again. This is a question that everyone's asking.
I was reading a book by a guy called Rudolf Steiner actually, and he started something called the Waldorf Schools. There's one here in Bryanston, I believe, and it talks about everything that we're talking about right now. There's no such thing as new ideas. Do you know what I mean? Everything is just being repackaged for its time. These things were being talked about in like the 1800s. However, there is a generation that will ultimately rebel.
Sure.
And say, hey, I'm not down for like just following somebody's autocratic orders. Right? And then we call this generation millennials. But yes, this notion of meaning is important for everyone, which is why once I launched that class inside Google, it was not surprising that 50% of the people that attended that class were over the age of 40, right? Very seasoned in what they do, very good, but everybody wants to try something new. Everybody wants to use their talent in a different way. So I guess that was launched across like 50 countries, Google offices, if you will. And I realized there's probably something happening here. There's probably something meaningful here. I guess coming towards the end of last year, I realized that, I guess when good things like this are created, they should not be reserved for a few, right?
Sure.
And I could have been anywhere in the world to now, ask the question, where can I do this to reach people outside? But I'm from South Africa. I love this country. I want to do good work here, and I'm back here again for the second round, right? And so that brings us into all things O-School.
O-School, yeah.
Which is why I'm here, right? And
just explain O-School
right,
quickly.
O-School. So the letter O, right?
Yeah, sounds, not Oprah.
By the way that you say that, I feel like you want me to explain that. And I do get asked that. Is this Oprah's school?
Exactly.
No, it's not Oprah's school, but we wouldn't mind some investment from it, right?
Sure.
But the O stands for the word oneness, right? And so the earlier part of our conversation is all about this notion of diversity and pluralism. It's kind of like understanding our differences to know that we're really the same. And this speaks to this idea of oneness, which is really important, I think, in all things O-School. This then becomes the foundation for a new kind of education. So we talk about then designing everything that people are learning around what they want to become and who they are innately. Right. And so, for example, coming out of a life design class, which let's say would be a foundation class at O School, you would then understand, okay, I need to, if I want to go into an area of science and business, then I need to prove my knowledge in those areas and I need to create my own education around that.
But not only that, I need to perhaps the right term is augment or complement it with a ballet class. Why? Because I need to understand a certain part of the arts.
Absolutely.
There's a great deal more than just that education. It's full on education. It's contextualization again.
Absolutely, right? So, I mean, I've actually like summarized it into three areas. It's this idea of A, being, and then B, thinking, and then C, making, right? So it's this whole idea of, not just how can I be the best thinker, how can I be a best producer, right? Because we're in this idea of now this culture of making things.
Sure.
But how can I be the best human that I can be, right? And so understanding how your mind works, understanding how your body works. I mean, for example, your brain sits in your gut. You ever think about this? The food that you eat determines how smart that you are. So these are things that we understand about how we function, but they haven't yet been incorporated into our education.
And never mind our education, our workplaces,
and our workplaces, etc. So O-School is not like this institution that sits within four walls and it just admits X many students per year, but rather a philosophy and a DNA that becomes a part of many different schools that we will now partner with here.
And that's your next step. So off air we asked this, and we've chatted a little bit before this. And so your next step is to really begin rolling out this ethos, this way of thinking into schools at almost a foundation phase, because, well, it's not quite foundation in the sense of education, but it's certainly a foundational element of an education that then can contextualize their experience going forward. So you're going to high schools, as I understand it, is that correct? And just tell us about what you expect to have happen there.
Right. I mean, there's a legion of new schools coming up in South Africa, right? And they're trying to redo the whole education system, and they're doing some incredible things.
Are you referring to this affordable private education?
That's one way of talking about it. Okay. Yeah, I think there's other ones that are not so affordable, but still speak to building leaders of the future and that kind of thing.
Sure.
But these are like these Harvard models. It's only available to a few. I think what we're interested in O-School is how can we get this philosophy into as many schools as possible across the board. So high schools is a start, right? Then we need to think about how do we do this with higher education institutions as well, since people end up there. And then of course the third place is organizations, because that's another extension of learning. And so starting in high schools is just a way of understanding where is the root causes or the root drivers in this kind of societal thinking. Where does it come from, right? And it comes from simple things, man. Like you don't do well in a maths exam, and now you're told that you have no future.
Yeah.
So now this becomes like your subconscious,
And by the way, you could have done poorly in your maths exam because you're ill, not because you don't have a mathematical brain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how can we start getting this philosophy into all kinds of institutions? I think this is what's interesting, because a lot of institutions are coming to us and saying, we want to prepare our young people for the future of work. We want our young people to be the best that they can be. And we can't do an overhaul. We don't know how to do it. And actually, there isn't much to do, because you still need to have people learning biology, history, and math. But can you tell them why they're learning it? Can you tell them how they can use it?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the game changer.
Again, contextualization.
Contextualization.
Do you know that we've actually run out of time, which frustrates me quite a lot, because it feels like we're just getting into it. This is 30 minutes.
Fascinating.
So I'm going to have to cut us short, because live conversation.
Okay.
But Samir, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for doing what you do.
Thank you.
We are very excited to watch you help the evolution of organizations, education in the country, and we're going to have you back in a short while. I know there's a summit coming up.
Yeah.
And that's osummit.org if people want to find out about that.
Yeah, osummit.org.
Osummit.org.
Right.
And we'll have you back after that and see where you're at in a few months.
Yeah.
But thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
All right, that was Samir Rogi, who is the founder of O-School. And we look forward to seeing what he's going to be doing. That's all that we have time for this week on Future CEOs. We'll see you same time, same place next week, Thursday. Go and do. That's the clarion call. Go and do.
Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.